So even though this year we've been doing things of halakha every week, I'm not doing something in halakha today. Last week, as I was discussing the Omer, I said if you wanted to discuss the Omer from a philosophical or from a machshava perspective, then there's lots of things to say, but I didn't say anything, so I figured I'll come back and discuss it from a machshava perspective. Just in order to make sure that it wasn't connected to the parsha, so no one can say that I'm teaching the parsha, it's connected to next week's parsha. So I don't know how your long-term memories are, but you know what? You know what? If you know it, if you know it's worse every day, then it's okay. Then it's okay. Right, and that's because next week in Parshat Emor, there is a whole discussion about all the Mo'adim. So let's begin. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe l'mor. God said to Moshe, saying, Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem mo'adei Hashem asher tikra'u otam mikra'i kodesh elahim mo'adai. So we have an English translation, so we will use it. Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord which you shall proclaim to be holy gatherings, these are my feasts. So I hope that was worked well for you. What's interesting is the word mo'adai. It comes from the word mo'ed. Mo'ed, we're used to. Chol ha-mo'ed, mo'ed, right? But as far as I can tell, this is the first time the word mo'ed was used with this particular meaning. Till this point, the word mo'ed had referred to a place, the ohel mo'ed, which means a place of meeting. And once you realize that, so that it means meeting, it really means appointed, but it means appointed place, but it can also be appointed time, it could be that the idea of the mo'ed, of the holiday, is to have a meeting with God, to have a rendezvous with God, and that would be the meaning here as well. The Chumash continues right afterwards. Second source, Eilam Ode Hashem, Mikrei Kodesh, Ashet Rukuro Tamba Mo'adam. These are the feasts, holy gatherings, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. So you see they switched here to gatherings from feasts. Again, they're just flipping a coin how to translate Moed over here. I think I would translate it as appointed times, or make it easier, holidays. That also works. B'chodesh harishon b'rabasar l'chodesh bein arbayim pesach l'Hashem. So we shouldn't be all that surprised that the first holiday that we come across is a holiday called Passover, or Pesach. Why? Because apparently the Jewish calendar begins in the spring. Jewish calendar begins with Pesach. Jewish history begins with Pesach. The Jewish people begin as a people with Pesach. So Pesach, therefore, would be the beginning. What you also should note is something we've pointed out many times, and that is, again, Pasuk Hey, B'yom Rishon Bar Basa L'Chodesh Bein Arbayim Pesach L'Hashem. The holiday of Pesach is on the 14th in the afternoon. U'v'chamishasar Yom L'Chodesh Hazeh Chag HaMatzot L'Hashem. Shivat Yamim Matzot Tochelu. And then the next day is another holiday. What's the other holiday called? The other holiday is called Chag HaMatzot, which means this is very consistent throughout the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. The language of the Mishnah and the Gemara is definitely different. Our vernacular is different. But as far as the Torah is concerned, the word Pesach only refers to the time that you can bring the Korban Pesach or you were to eat the Korban Pesach. The other holiday is called Chag HaMatzot. We just combine them, we throw them together, and we call Chag HaMatzot Pesach, and we say the last day of Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach. The Chumash does not know of a seventh day of Pesach. The Chumash knows of only one day, even perhaps less than one day. And the other thing about Pesach, which may be interesting, but we're not going to talk about it now, is that Pesach is uniquely a Beit HaMikdash holiday. And as being that it's a Beit HaMikdash holiday, it follows the calendar of the Beit HaMikdash, which is a little different from our regular calendar. If I were to ask you a very simple question, Judaism, what comes first, day or the night? So all of you know that in Judaism, the day begins the evening before. With sunset, we start the next day. And that's simple. It's well known. But it's Vayher Vayivoker is probably good proof, except for the Rashbam, who says, Vayihi Erev, and it became Erev. So if it became Erev, what was it before? It was day. So he claims no day comes first. Now how can the Rashbam say such a thing? And what's interesting about this Rashbam, if you look in your regular Mikraot Gedolot, which has a Rashbam on it, you won't find it there. Because they so much didn't like this idea that they took out the first three chapters. But if you have a whole book, Rashbam al Torah, you'll find this. But now if I go back and try to explain the Rashbam, it could be that he felt that the 6-7 days in Gan Eden were the same as the Beit HaMikdash. No, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. The Beit HaMikdash, it was the other way around. The Beit HaMikdash, the etiquette of the day begins in the morning. All the laws of the Beit HaMikdash, it begins with the beginning of the day, with the morning, with sunrise, not with sunset the day before. And therefore, korbanot could be eaten after sunset from the previous day, because the night follows the day in the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, there's a commentary, Atzmot Yosef, if I'm not mistaken, on Kedushin, and he claims that that's the explanation of the Rashbam, is that back in Gan Eden, it was Beit HaMikdash type of time. But the Rashbam may not be pshat, even though he always insists that he's pshat. Well, what is interesting is in Egypt, you can do your research and find out when they started the day. I'll just throw that out. Anybody?
Well, they worship the sun, so they
do. Good. So was the new day at daybreak, or is it at midday? Okay, so.
Daybreak, because of
you're guessing.
I'm guessing.
Okay. Guessing is good, but may not be right. Anyway, let's
get.
I don't think so. I've heard such a thing that in ancient Egypt they began the day at midday. I have kids like this also. That's the thing. They're Egyptian. Okay. Actually, midday would be good for some of them. Vayidaber Hashem, next source 3. So there was a little more detail about Pesach that we left out. Then we get to our next Moed. Now, what did Moed mean? Moed, we decided, means appointed. Appointed what? Appointed time, appointed place. Over here means holiday. So we get to the next one, source 3. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Again, a whole new section, new conversation, new beginning. And what does it say? Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem, ki tavo el ha'aretz asher ani noten lechem, uktzartem et ktzira, ve'veitem et omer reshit ktzirchem el ha'kohen. Now, what is this law known as? Don't say Sefirat HaOmer because you're not right yet. And it's not Bikurim, so don't say that either. So what is this? This is known as the Omer. What do we know here about the Omer? The Omer over here is bringing not Bikurim in the sense of the first fruits, but this Bikurim is of the first grain. Based upon other places in the Chumash, commentary of Rashi, and so on, tradition, Torah, Shabbat Peh, the first grain which is brought, the way this is done, it's done from barley. They would take the first stalks of barley, they would cut them, they would bring them, what does it say again? It would be lifted, waved in front of God. Lirit sonchem, as a service, mimachrat ha-shabbat, yinufen ha-kohen. You do this after the Shabbat or after the holiday, and you can go back in the context here and figure out if Shabbat means chag or Shabbat means Shabbat. It should not be a question if you read all the verses here. Va'asitem biyom hanifchem, the day that you do the waving at Omer, kevestem, and tells you what offering should be brought. U'mincha shnei esronim, salat b'la b'shem, and ishe la'ashem reich nechoch v'nisk. Go yayin v'riv tahim v'lechem v'kali v'charmel lo tochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh. You're not allowed to eat from the new grain, from the new season, until this day. Adav yachem et korban elokechem. Till on this day, till the korban is brought. That creates a problem. Is it till this day, or is it till the korban is brought? What is it that allows you to eat the new grain? Chukat olam ledorotechem. This is a statute for all your generations. Bichol moshvotechem. So what does bichol moshvotechem mean? So next time somebody tells you that the law of chadash, that you can't eat the new grain, is only a law in Eretz Yisrael, that's a little difficult when you read those last two words in the verse. What do they say? Bichol moshvotechem. So that. Good. So ki tavo then would mean that's when it begins.
Right.
which means this law didn't begin until they got to the land, but afterwards, once you get to the... Why didn't it begin until they got the land? Right, right. So if you're not doing any farming, it's going to be a little difficult to wave the sand, right? So this law begins when they get to the land. Once it begins, what does it say? That this is a law that you cannot eat the new grains until that day, or the day that the korban is brought. B'chol moshvatechem. It then continues, Usfartem lachem b'marchara shabbat miyom habiyachem et omer tnufa sheva shabbatot motiena. And you count from the day that the omer is brought 7 weeks, complete weeks. For some reason, I didn't give you the continuation of here. I cut it out. Ad b'marchara shabbat hashvi'it. I have this. You don't have this. Tisperu chamishim yom. You do this till you get to the end of the 7 weeks. V'hikraftem mincha chadasha l'Hashem. Then you're going to bring a new offering to God. B'moshvoteichem taviu lechem tnufa shnayim esrim. Da-da-da bikurim l'Hashem. V'hikraftem alechem shivat kvasim. So on, you will bring the lechem on this day. I'll skip a little bit more. V'nifa kohen otam alechem habikurim tnufa lefnei Hashem al shnei kvasim kodesh yu l'Hashem la-kohen. Ukratem be'etzem yom hazeh mikra kodesh. On that day, it will be a holy day. Lachem, kom lechet avalo ta'asu. All work you will not do. Chukat olam b'chom moshvateichem. This will be the statute wherever you live. L'dorateichem for all your generations. So if you want to claim that b'chom moshvateichem only means Israel, so then you don't have to keep shavuos if you're outside of Israel. But again, it's you can't say that. Uvektzirchem ektzir artzichem lo tichleh. And when you do it b'artzichem, in your land, again, b'chom moshvateichem versus Artzuchem, then it says, Lo techale pa'at sadeh b'kutzurcha. Don't cut off the edges of the field, the pe'ah of the sadeh. So again, it's very clear. Pe'ah is a mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael. Chadash is a mitzvah all over the world. B'chol mashvoteichem. Shavuot, or Atzeret, Chag HaBikurim, is a holiday all over the world. And that's what B'chol mashvoteichem means, wherever you will end up living. Now, what's interesting is this whole interlude, which you can look up later from Pasuk Ted Vav all the way through, well, no, I don't want to say it like that. This interlude of the bringing of the Omer and the counting of the Omer, which are two separate mitzvot. First you bring the Omer, then you start counting the Omer. But what does the counting of the Omer do? It does something very interesting. And something which for you will be so simple and so clear, you're going to wonder why I even bothered saying this.
It brings you to Shavuot.
Exactly. It brings us to Shavuot. Now, why was that so simple and clear that I didn't need to say it? Because you know
it's
that you...
That's obvious, but it wasn't saying it.
No, why is that obvious? Well, why is that... One second. Why is that obvious?
That's what we do.
No, there's a connection.
Why is there a connection? What? So, let me point something out. Which should be very, very clear and very, very simple, but it won't be. But you should have known this before I started. The Jewish holidays have agricultural significance, and they have historical/theological significance. Correct? We can agree at this point. Pesach. Pesach has been mentioned many times till this point in the Chumash. What is the significance of Pesach? Or good. So, is Chag Aviv, as it's been described in previous times in the Chumash, telling us that it is a spring festival? Or is it saying, no, this is the time that you left Egypt? If you look through the various verses, you will see that all the discussion about Pesach... Exactly, because in the spring you left. It doesn't tell you that there's something special in terms of the agriculture. Matter of fact, quite the opposite is true. All the discussion about Pesach, or if you're going to start up with me now and say Chag HaMatzot, or the two of them, are related to the history of what happened, that we left Egypt. That's what the holiday is. Till this point, there's absolutely no agricultural identity to Pesach, unless you want to push that verse about Aviv, but still, you read the verse, and it's the other way around. If you didn't know that there was an agricultural side to it, you would not have figured out from that verse, because what does it say again? for in the spring is when you left Egypt. It doesn't say because there's something special about the spring. Second point, this other holiday, which you can call Chag HaShavuot, which is the first time it's referred to as Chag HaShavuot, the holiday of the harvest, the Katzir, or Chag HaBikurim, however you want to call it, is there a historical event connected to this holiday, or is this an agricultural holiday? So again, you're too smart. Go ahead. Right. Now, what's the one small problem with that explanation or that position?
It doesn't say it.
Which means till now, we have two separate holidays. One called Pesach Chag HaMatzot, which exclusively is historical, and another holiday, which is a holiday of the Katzir, which is exclusively agricultural. Why would I even suspect there's any connection between the two? I mean, if you want to read an interesting verse, or you want me to read to you an interesting verse, the way that it's referred to, this is back in Parashat Mishpatim, in Perek Kaf Gimel. It says as follows, Shalosh Rigalim Techogli Bashana. There are three holidays you should celebrate for me during the year. Et Chag HaMatzot, Tishmor Shivat Yamim Tuchal Matzot, Kasher Tziviticha, Lemo'ed Chodesh Aviv, Kivo Yatzatim Mitzrayim. What's the first one? Why? Because we left Egypt. V'lo yiru panai rekam. V'chag ha-katsir bikurei ma'asecha asher tizra b'sadeh, and the holiday of the first of your fruits, which will come from the ground. V'chag ha-asif, and the holiday of the gathering, b'tzeit ha-shana, basvacha et ma'asecha min asadeh, when you gather the things from the field. Now, how interesting is that? Pesach is defined historically, and the other two are defined agriculturally. I've pointed out in the past that the Vilna Gaon, and you can look at the Meshech Chachma on this verse, quotes the Vilna Gaon as saying, at this point it's not called Chag HaSukkot. Why not? Because what is Sukkot? The famous question, why is Sukkot in the fall and not in the spring? Right, it should be in the spring. That's when we left. And the Vilna Gaon says, no. When we left, we had the Ananei HaKavod. But when we celebrate Sukkot, it's not for the Ananei HaKavod that we had in the spring. It's for the Ananei HaKavod that disappeared after the Chet HaEgel and then came back. When did they come back? They come back after Yom Kippur when we were forgiven. And after they started gathering all the materials to build the Mishkan. Then the Ananei HaKavod returns. So what does that take you towards? He has an exact calculation that brings you right to the first day of Sukkot. That's when the Ananei HaKavod returned, and that's when it became Sukkot. The Meshech Chachma says, oh, look at this. What a good... Here, in Mishpatim, it's referring to Sukkot before there was a Chet HaEgel, and guess what it's called? It's not called Chag HaSukkot. What's it called? Chag HaAsif. So just in terms of this idea that things can possibly change because there was a dynamic in the desert that impacted and affected the calendar... Here we have a mismatch. We have three holidays, one historical and two agricultural. The two agricultural, the beginning of the harvest and the end of the harvest. Those are the two holidays. So now you're again going to come and tell me, oh, but excuse me, but Chag HaShavuot is when the Torah is given. And if you're really clever, you're going to come and tell me that the Sefirat HaOmer connects leaving Egypt and standing by Har Sinai, correct? Because that's what you've been told, and that's what rabbis have been telling you, and I'm sure people say this all the time. There's only one problem. Where does it say it? Again, if you showed me where it said it, then I could begin. A matter of fact, not only doesn't it say it, what does it say? It says that, did they count Sefirat HaOmer in the desert? I would have no reason to believe so, because what does it say? Ki tavo ha'aretz. Did they bring Trumot and Ma'asrot before? No, why? Because this is an agricultural law. So it sounds very much that this, by the way, this whole question is revolves around the point which is debated in the Gemara, whether Sfirat HaOmer Bizman Hazeh is a Torah law or a rabbinic law. So the dominant opinion, the Rambam doesn't agree with this, the dominant opinion is that Sfirat HaOmer and Bizman Hazeh is a rabbinic law. The Gemara says, Amemar Amar Zecher LeChorban, Zecher LeMikdash. This is one of the things we do to remember the Beit HaMikdash, but it's not a Torah law. Why is it not a Torah law? Because, no, I'm saying at this point, today, there's no longer a Beit HaMikdash. There's no longer Beit HaMikdash, so then it's not a Torah law, because the counting is between two things, according to this approach. What are the two things? The bringing of the Korban Omer and the end bringing of the Korbanot on Chag Shavuot. That's what the counting is. You don't have the Korban Omer, then you can't do the counting, at least on a Torah level. Again, the funny thing is that some of you, if you open the Siddur and the Shuls, they say, Hinni Muchen Muzum Lekayem Mitzvot Aseh. So Rav Moshe Feinstein wasn't very pleased with that because he said, that's not true. You're not going to be Mekayem Mitzvot Aseh. And you're probably better off not saying that Hinni Muchen Muzum, if you ask my opinion, but why ask?
But doesn't it also refer to Shavuot as Atzeret?
Yes. Yes. But again, well, you have to go back and track at which point which things are said. Okay, so far, by the way, this point about the sphera, if you want to see somebody actually write something about this, in source 19, this is one of the Rishonim, this is the Ran, Rabbeinu Nisim, commenting on the Rif at the end of Psachim, which means unless you know that this is here, you will never find it. Because the end of Psachim in the Gemara, it doesn't talk about Sfirat HaOmer. But the Rif, who takes the laws of the Gemara, and he gets rid of all of the discussions and just gives the bottom line law, so therefore the Rif is probably around a third of the size of the Gemara itself. The problem is the Rif doesn't do that to Mesechtot, which are not Halacha Lamaseh. So over here, the laws of the Omer are actually written in a Gemara, which is called Masechet Menachot. So therefore, how did he solve the problem? He just took the laws and he stuck them to the end of Psachim. Because what do you do right after Pesach? You start counting the Omer. So for him, this was a logical place. So over here, the Ran commentating on the Rif, which is commentating on a Gemara, which is not there, because the Gemara is someplace else. That's why I'm saying, if you don't know it's there, you'll never find it, writes as following. Uva Haggadah, when he writes Haggadah here, he does not mean Haggadah Shel Pesach. He means Agadah. He means tradition. Legend. Uva Haggadah Gam Kin Amru, B'Shah She'amr Lehem Moshe Ta'avduna Telokim Alahar Hazeh. There's also a tradition written in the Midrash that when Moshe said to the people, God said, you will serve God on this mountain, Amr lo Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu, Eimatai Avodazu. When will we serve God on this mountain? By the way, when did God say that you will serve God on this mountain? Yeah, back at the Sneh. So when are they asking? I don't know when they're asking. Apparently, they have to be asking if you want all this to fit. Again, what I'm trying to get to the point is how pshat is this and how something else is this. He says, Moshe, when are we going to get to this mountain and do this service? He said, 50 days from now. And everyone counted. And therefore the rabbis made a law of Sfirat HaOmer. Now this is very strange. Because who really made a law of Sfirat HaOmer? Right. So what the Ran is understanding, maybe this is explaining why the rabbis instituted Sfirat HaOmer Bizman Hazeh when there's no longer a Korban. Because if there's no longer a Korban, it's not from the Torah anymore, but maybe the Jews counted then. Klomar bizman hazeh she'ein anu mevi'in korban v'lo omer ela mechashvim 50 yom l'simchat haTorah k'mo shemoni Yisrael ba'oto zman. He says maybe we're counting. So this is the opinion that you all know. The Jews counted when they left Egypt. So he writes in the end v'zeh vaday derech midrash. He goes, that's a very nice midrash. Who? De'ikud de'milta zeichel l'mikdash. He goes, but the truth is, why do we count? We do zeichel l'mikdash. Why do we do zeichel l'mikdash? Because that's when they counted. Why do they count? That's what God said to count. When did God say to count? From the time you bring the Korban Omer till Chag HaShivuot, which is now called Chag HaShivuot. Right, as was the opinion of Meimer. He goes, no, everything in his discussion until this point really proves the point that Bizman Hazeh, Sfira, is not from the Torah, it's only from the Rabbanan. And as I said, the Rambam disagrees, but he is a somewhat of a minority opinion. How much of a minority opinion? There is an argument. The Mishnah Brewer brings a whole bunch of people who agree with the Rambam, says he's not such a minority opinion, but nonetheless, the Shulchan Aruch rules that it's Rabbanan Bizman Hazeh. Anyway, that's all regarding the counting. So what I'm asking you to do is something very simple. To start all of this as if we don't know anything and look at the holiday, try to understand its identity. And we have a very strange holiday. And what is this holiday called? It's called the Moed. And what is this holiday? It's the holiday of the Omer. Now, we normally would define a holiday as something where there is a prohibition of work. There's no prohibition of work over here. So again, what kind of Moed is this? Which leads us to, we're a little afraid to say famous, because then if you don't know it, you feel inadequate, which I guess is the job of a teacher anyway, right? Famous comment of the Ramban, which is found on the top of page 2, source number 4. The Ramban understands that Pesach and Shavuot are linked by the Omer, and the 7 weeks of the Omer are really the same thing as the 7 days of Sukkot. So therefore he's saying that Chol Moed of Pesach is not just what you would call Chol Moed, but you have a whole bunch of days of Chol Moed. Let's read it so maybe to be a little bit clearer, where it's underlined. The Kadash Yom HaShmini Kishmini Shel Chag, the eighth is holy, like the eighth of Chag. V'yamim hasfurim b'entayim kicholu shemoed b'en rishon v'shmini b'chag. And the days that we count in the middle are like the chol moed in between. V'hu yom matan Torah shirim bo et esho hagdola v'dvarav shem'u mitoch ha'esh. And again, he's going right into the idea of Har Sinai being there. V'lekach yirabotenu zal b'chol makom chag shvod hatzeret. And that's why it's called Atzeret, because just like you have Shmini Atzeret, Shavuot is the Atzeret of Pesach. Now, all this is very nice, and I'll say it again, is not represented by the verses that we're reading over here, and all the verses that do speak about Matan Torah. It clearly takes us to more or less the same time, but we have no verse that tells us Chag Bikurim is Chag Matan Torah. And that's a whole other discussion, which I'm not going to have with you right now, but that's lacking. The Ramban just throws it together, just like he wanted to throw it together before. But something else happened here, and that's really what I want you to pay attention to. That we have this holiday, which is primarily or exclusively, till this point, understood as a historical holiday, a second holiday, which was understood exclusively as an agricultural holiday, and something came here and linked the two together. And what is that? That's the Omer. So what the Omer accomplishes by linking them together, it also therefore gives Pesach an agricultural identity. Because now on Pesach, you're going to bring the Korban Omer. So therefore the first fruits of the grain will be taken on Pesach. Now Pesach just now became an agricultural holiday as well. That's what's accomplished over here by these verses. Did that make any sense? So I'm saying until this point, it wasn't here. And Pesach links the two together. Yes?
Two questions. They would bring the Korban Omer, what we would call the first day of Chol Moed, after Pesach?
Right after that night. The night.
What we would call, Chag Rishon.
Right, that's when they would do the cutting, and then the Korban.
They'd cut it at night.
They would cut it at night. Right.
Also, isn't there any, Mishnah or something where, somebody like Rabban Gamliel comes along and says, well, now that we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, we should still count the Omer, the way that we bench lulav or whatever?
No.
How come? Why deal with the lulav and not deal with that?
No, you want a quick answer or you want a long answer?
Do you want me to give you
homework to read? Rabbi Soloveitchik addressed that in an essay that was published not that long ago, and he felt that there's two different ways that you have zecher lemikdash. Some things that are zecher lemikdash are zecher to the performance of the mikdash, and certain things are zecher l'churban. But the question that came up over here is a question that you're not asking, but you'll say, oh, this will support your question, and that is, what about the shechianu? Why do we say shechianu when you take the lulav and etrog? which is not that good of a question, because you can say that the Shachiyanu is referred to the first day, and the first day is from the Torah. But the question is the other way around. Why, when we do the mitzvah of Sfira, do we not say a Shachiyanu? We waited all year, why don't we say a Shachiyanu by Sfira? I mean, the other part of the question that he was dealing with in that shir was, why don't we have Sveika de Yoma in Chutz La'aretz by the Omer? We don't have a Shachiyanu. But it's not for the counting. Yeah, but still, that if there were not any Omer and you just had Chag HaShavuot, you would still be making that Shachiyanu. So it's a little hard to prove that that Shachiyanu is for the counting. But
it would be impossible to have a Shachiyanu. You can't make a bracha on something unless it's Odor L'Atziato, and the counting as a unit. You can't make Shachiyanu every single day, and you can't. And if you
why not?
Count it
first of all, why not? Secondly, if it's over L'Asiyatan, that means it's before you start, not after it's completed.
Well, that's not clear at all. Why don't we do everything?
No, but you just said it's over. If it's over
Right.
It's still over. But still, over the sit-down is before you perform the action. And it doesn't really, again, that's another question. Why didn't do the Shachiyanu? But he felt that there are certain things which are zecher l'chorban and certain things zecher l'mikdash, and he felt that the counting of the Omer is really zecher l'chorban more so than zecher l'mikdash. There's a lot to talk about that, but I'm not going to get into that more than necessary. And I think I already did. Once we see this link, though, between Pesach, the Omer, and Chag HaBikurim, so something else emerges that we would not have noticed otherwise. Or maybe we notice this right away because everything is simple and clear to us. The first stop is matzah. And matzah, of course, is a prohibition of chametz. Matzah is bread, which is prepared very, very quickly and can't have any chametz to it. Why we have to eat matzah on Pesach, or what's the problem with chametz, the real answer is because that's what God said. What's the not real answer? Don't take this the wrong way. The not real answer is what the Gemara says. What does the Gemara say? It says that chametz is the Yetzer Hara. Now, if chametz is the Yetzer Hara, then why are we allowed to partake of it the rest of the year? Why don't we just say it's like pig? Although, I'm not allowed to say that. I found it some... Anyway, I'm saying if something is bad for you spiritually, so then why should it be allowed? Excuse me? That bread is the Yetzer Hara, or that matzah is bad for you?
Really, you shouldn't eat bread, right? The whole, you don't have to diet.
Okay. By the way, I'm going to stay with this Gemara because there's a lot of things that like it. Look at source number 5. It has nothing to do with Pesach. And for that matter, it has nothing to do with matzah. Which means this whole explanation, why do we eat matzah, not chametz, because chametz is the Yetzer Hara, everything is great about it, except it doesn't say anything about Pesach or matzah within it. What does it say? This is the way that Rav Hamnuna would end up his tefillah. The end of the Shmoneh Esrei, this is the part you say. Iku diyamri ha Rav Hamnuna matzli la, Rav Alexandri batav de matzli amar hachi, and Rav Alexandri said this at the end of the prayer. Ribon ha'olamim, master of universes, galui v'yadu l'fanecha shiritzoneinu la'asot ritzoncha. It is clear and known to you that our will is to do your will, Omima Akev, and what's holding us back? Soor Shebe Isa. What's that? The yeast in the dough. The Soor is not really yeast, it's a chametzing agent. Okay? I don't have a good word for that. Vishib and Malchiot, and the fact that we're controlled by others. Leavening. Yihi ratzon ulfanecha shetatzilenu miyadam v'nashuv lasod chukei Ritzoncha b'lev shalem. May be your will that we are freed from those who oppress us, and let us serve you with a full heart. As I said, this is something he would say every day. Had nothing to do with Pesach or with Matzah. Rashi says Sa'or b'shebi'isa in source 6, Yetzahara shebilvavenu hamach mitzenu, that causes us to miss opportunities. So you see that Rashi had to make sure to throw the word chametz into it. But based on this Gemara, you have almost, as far as I know, a universal perspective among Ba'alei Machshava that chametz represents the Yetzahara, which leads me to the same point. If it is Yetzahara, then why are we allowed to eat it the rest of the year? Okay. Now, this association with chametz and the Yetzahara may be a bit stronger than you would think. And let's look at source number 7. It's the Chemdat Hayamim, which we've quoted before. I told you is a suspicious source. It's debated where it comes from. Ver'ui l'kol ish Yisrael, it is worthwhile for every person of Israel, yot mechavein ba'achilat matzah, that his kavanah should be, as he eats matzah, l'takein avon avinu harishon, chet ba'achilat etz hadat tov ra. That as you eat the matzah, you should have in mind to fix the sin of eating from the tree of knowledge and good and evil. Which, of course, then you'll ask me, well, what does one thing have to do with the other? So on the simplest level, I can say the way that it's formulated by some of the Ba'alei Chassidut, that here is the first time we have an order to eat, and there was the first time we had an order not to eat. So therefore, when God tells us eat, you know, matzah, which was Pesach Mitzrayim, to eat matzah, it comes to fix the time that God told us not to eat something, and we messed up. So that's more or less the way that they try. But a lot of people quote this. We could have filled up pages and pages of those who quote this in one form or another, the connection between the eating of the matzah and the chet of the eating from the Eitz Hadat Tov V'Ra. But in order to understand the connection, or why somebody would connect them, let me point out a verse which I'm sure all of you are familiar with, which again is not in front of you. In Perek Gimel, in Bereshit, after the sin, when God starts reading out the various punishments that will be given out, I'm in Perek Gimel. God says that Ula Adamar ki shemati l'kol yishtecha v'tocha min ha'etz asher tziviticha lemor lo tochal mimenu, because you listened to your wife and you ate from the tree that I told you not to eat. Arurah adama ba'avarecha, the earth will be cursed because of you. Bitzavon techlena, with sadness you're going to eat kol yimei chayecha. Kotz v'dardar tatzmiyech lech v'achalt et esef hasadeh u'bizeat apecha tochal lechem, and by the sweat of your brow you will eat bread. So we find over here bread included within the punishment that will take place. So now, here's a theoretical approach. If bread is included within the punishment, then perhaps bread should have been there within the sin. And remarkably, we find this opinion, which I will admit to you, is not so simple until you start looking at it a deeper way. First of all, let me ask you a question. What was the Eitz Hadat? Or Eitz Hadat Tov V'Ra. What was the tree? What kind of tree was it?
Grapes.
What other possibilities? Apple. What other possibilities? So now, most likely, it was a one-of-a-kind tree. And there are no more of those trees. Does that make sense to you? Because we don't know of any tree that has that kind of result. So most likely, it's its own tree that by definition, we can't know what kind of tree it is. Yes? No? Yes?
Unless we think it's something that has poison.
I'm just saying, it's most likely a tree that we've never seen. Now, the Gemara has all kinds of opinions what it is. I'll quote a Gemara over here, which I heard the various opinions from the rabble over here. In source 12.
Are harubim sometimes called grapefruits?
Source 12. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Ukva, Va'amri Lamar Ukva. No, we have to read the whole thing. Third line down. Kimanda Amar Oto Ilan She'achal Mimeno Dam Rishon. Geffen Haya. That supports the opinion that says Geffen. Titania, as we learned in the Braita. Rabbi Meir Omer Oto Ilan She'achal Dam Rishon Mimeno. Geffen Haya. First approach of Rabbi Meir, that it was grapes. She'ein l'chadavish mevi yilala la'adam el yayin, because things don't bring curses upon man like wine does. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, chita haya, it was wheat. It grew on a wheat tree. Now that could be a little, I'll come to that in a second. That could be a little strange. She'ein atinok yodea l'kot abba ve'ima ad shi'itom tam dagan. That he's saying is that, this is, again, very interesting, but not so simple. He's saying, at which point is a child able to identify their parents, able to speak, around at the same time that in terms of their physical development, they're able to eat things from grains. So he says, therefore, grains allows a person to have knowledge. So therefore, now he knows who his parents are, he knows how to speak. So he says, therefore, it must be a tree of knowledge is wheat. Now, that's not so simple. Just throw in the last opinion, Rabbi Nechemia Omer Te'inahaya, it was Te'ina. And why? Because that's what they covered themselves up with right afterwards, so obviously they were not all that far from Te'ina, from a fig tree. Now, of the three opinions over here, one stands out. And which one is that? Chita stands out. Why? Because it doesn't make... It's because not... which leads us to a point that obviously there's something deeper over here that we need to understand. On the one... But that's from here. Well, I don't know if the person studied or not, but I heard you, and we'll come back and see exactly why they're saying this. If, first of all, I suspect that it's the connection between chet and chita. Chet and chita. That the words are not all that different from one another. If you want to see somebody dead who said that. I know that makes you so much happier. It makes it. Let's look at source 13. Rav Moshe Mikor Devero, one of the great Kabbalists. V'gam chita milashon chet. Okay, now you see it. Not only dead, but a resident of Tzfat. So, how much better can you do? V'gam source 13. V'gam chita milashon chet. The word chita comes from the same as sin, and I can assure you that this has been quoted many, many times after that. You will then find various opinions who'll try to weave together, like for example, example in source number 9, which I'm not going to read, which will, the Tiferet Shlomo says that on Pesach night, you eat matzah, and you drink wine to cover the two opinions of what the Eitz Hadat was, and they're both true. It's both of them. It's those who understand the deep thing that he's saying. His point is, again, that we're trying to create some kind of a tikkun. Now, I want to ask you a question, which is an obvious question, which obviously all of you have thought about, and requires an answer. When Adam was told that you can eat from all the trees of the field, there's one tree you can't eat from, and that's the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. But he was also told there's another tree there, which he was allowed to eat from, which is the Eitz HaChayim. Now, we all know that if Adam was Jewish, what would he have done? He first would have eaten three or four fruits from the Eitz HaChayim, which gives him the ultimate get-out-of-jail-free card. That's it. Now he could live forever. And then he eats from the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. And because God says, when you're going to die, but he already ate from the Eitz HaChayim. So what would have been the matter with that thinking? You don't like my question, or this has, of course, occurred to all of you, right? That we all know that's what we would have done. We would have eaten. So by the way, what do we now realize? Why doesn't he do that?
Because he didn't have the knowledge to realize what it is to die.
Why is he afraid of dying? Nobody ever died before him.
But I don't think that's the whole thing. I think that part of what the sin is, it includes within it an element of immediate gratification. Because anybody who looks at the situation logically and analyzes this and says, this brings life, this brings death, what do you do first? First you take life and then you take death. So obviously part of the sin is this immediacy of, again, immediate gratification, which is very often involved in sin, but I think it's an element there within quote-unquote original sin, and therefore he doesn't do it this way. Correct what you pointed out, that the Sfat Emet says that what was he supposed to do in source number 8? He was supposed to first eat from the Eitz HaChaim. And had he eaten from the Eitz HaChaim first, everything would have been different. Source number 8, B'sefer Or HaChaim, Hikshe Lama Lo Chash HaKadosh Baruch Hu Gam Mikodem HaChet SheYakdim Le'echom Eitz HaChaim. When it says that God kicks him out because maybe he'll eat from the Eitz HaChaim, so the Or HaChaim says, well, why wasn't God concerned with this beforehand? He could have eaten it from beforehand. So the Sfat Emet says, "Ve'ini ro makom kushya." He goes, "I don't understand this question." Kivade nirish kacha yaratzon habore. That's certainly what God wanted him to do. Yitbarach. Ve'im ha'yom kayem bizrizut hamitzvat asay. And had he performed the mitzvah bizrizut quickly, which mitzvah? Bechol etz agan ochal tochal. Vade haya nidbak bechayim. He certainly would have been infused with life. Ve'lo hayebo lechlal chet etzadat. And then the Eitz HaDaat would not at all have impacted it. And there are other, and I'm not going to read further, but right. Because once you have the Eitz HaChaim, and once you, then the Eitz HaDaat is not going to affect. And others make this point even stronger than the Sfat Emet, that the sequence was done wrong. The sin was going to the Eitz, again, this immediate gratification to sin, and going to the Eitz HaDaat Tovara instead of going to the Eitz HaChaim. So it's interesting then, if I think about matzah, matzah is bread that has to be prepared very, very quickly. And that seems to be a tikkun for eating from the Eitz HaDaat Tovara, which they ran quickly to do. So I think that that's more or less the deeper idea over here of... Say that again? Exactly what Adam was thinking, we'll leave for today. We'll perhaps come back to another time. But if we now realize what's going on, and we see the flow, man was supposed to go to the Eitz HaChaim. And let's make another observation about Eitz HaChaim. In Mishlei and Perek Gimel, and read all of Perek Gimel and Mishlei, if you like, for your homework, it talks about following the Torah. It talks about following the words of the Torah. You don't have this again. I'm sorry, Perek Gimel in Mishlei. Chapter begins, Bini Torati al tishkach, u'mitzvatai yitzor libecha, ki orich yamim u'shnot chayim, v'shalom yosifu lach. Don't forget my Torah, because what will Torah do for you? It will give you a long life. Ki orech yamim u'shnot chayim. It will give you a long life. A couple of verses down over here, it says a verse that maybe you know. And what is that? Etz chayim hi l'machzikim ba. For it is a tree of life. What is it referring to? The subject over here is Torah. Etz chayim l'machzikim is Torah. So therefore, this association with Torah as being the Etz chayim is again firmly established within the metaphor being utilized in Sefer Mishlei. As I said, read Perek Gimel. It's very, very clear that's what it means. So Adam was supposed to first go to the Eitz HaChaim, and then he can go to the Eitz HaDaat Tovara. Instead, he goes to the Eitz HaDaat Tovara. What's cursed is the bread. That's part of the curse, and therefore you see this opinion that it was the Chita. We move over to Pesach. We get to Pesach, and God says specifically to eat from the matzah. Now, what do we know based upon the Gemara? What is special about the matzah? That matzah is a type of a bread that doesn't have the Yetzer Hara. And again, I'm coming back to this idea now, that what are we trying to accomplish with the matzah? That this is a bread without the Yetzer Hara. Whatever is attractive about bread is not there in matzah. Okay? I'm sorry, I'm saying this, but I don't know how many of you ever salivated over... No. Over a piece of matzah, say, "Whoa, that looks no, it doesn't happen." Yeah, and that's as good as freshly baked. No, I don't think so. So this is bread without the Yetzer Hara. So now let's continue. What happens next? The Jews leave Egypt. What happens then? They take matzah with them. What happens then? The matzah runs out. What happens then? Then they get what?
Man.
How is the man described in the Chumash? There's one very... Now, the people don't know what it is. So what do they call it? Manhu. Excellent. How does Moshe refer to it? Because that's a little bit more interesting than what the people call it. I am right now in Perek. Tetvav. Perek Tetvav in Shemot. God says, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe, inini mamtir lechem lechem in hashamayim." But that's very important. It's not called something else. God refers it to as lechem in hashamayim. What do the people refer it to as? As man. There is a big argument what bracha they said on man. So one opinion is they would say hamotzi lechem in hashamayim, right? Based on this verse. Other opinion is they say borei mina mizonot, because there's all different types of mizonot. Shahakol would work as well. Fine. So the people go out. So God calls it lechem in hashamayim. V'yatzam look to, and people go and then take it. Just one second. Vayiru b'nei Yisrael, I am in Pasuk Tetvav, that would be Tetvav. Vayiru b'nei Yisrael v'yamru ish elachiv manhu, ki lo yodu mahu. The people said, oh, it's man, because they didn't know what it was. Vayom moshaleim hu halechem asher natan Hashem lachem la'ochla. So this is the bread that God gave you. Ze adavar shetziv Hashem lektu mimenu ish lefi ochlo, everyone collect, omer legulgelet. This is the only time that the word omer is used prior in the Torah to the word Omer being used within our context. Now, I want to stop there for a second. When we get to this point that we're in the desert and we're getting lechem in hashamayim, what should that be reminding us of? That should be reminding us, again, exactly the point you said earlier. And what's that? In Gan Eden, where God took care of us, which in Gan Eden we didn't work. So if we didn't work, where did food come from? So you're going to say, it doesn't grow on trees. Yeah, yeah. Where do they get food from? It came in Hashemayim. Everything came from God. All food came from God. Which, therefore, now having left Egypt, we should appreciate, we're back at the same point that we were in Gan Eden, where God is protecting, God is providing, everything is wonderful, and most importantly, the word over here used is the Omer. So therefore, the process over here should be, we go from matzah without the Yetzer Hara, which is lechem without the Yetzer Hara, we go to the man, which is lechem in Hashemayim, we then travel to Har Sinai, at which point the part of the korban for Chag HaBikurim is the Shtei HaLechem. Now there's real lechem with the Yetzer Hara, but now we can handle it. Why can we handle it? Because now Har Sinai is where we get the Torah, and that's the Eitz HaChayim. And once you take from the Eitz HaChayim, so now you should be able to handle. Now, something along the way goes wrong. The word Omer, which is used over here, again, please appreciate, the word Omer over here is used at the same juncture chronologically, namely, between Pesach and Shavuot. Along the way, we find Omer. What is the Omer? It's a measurement over here.
Do we know how big the measurement is?
I'm sure we do. We don't, but somebody does.
Yeah.
Regarding the relationship between the two uses of Omer, it's unclear. Somebody emailed me around a month ago and asked me something about it, and then he put up on his blog a whole analysis, which I thought was very, very good. So if you search for this, I'm sure you'll find it. Or if you really want to know, you can email me, and I'll search for it and find it. But that was part of the question. Part of my response was, I don't care if it's the same usage of the word. because it's being used at the same time, so therefore there's a relationship. And what the relationship is, we still need to figure out a little bit more. The Korban Omer is relatively unique in terms of the Korbanot. And why is that? Is that we're talking about using grain. We're talking about using barley. Barley is used in only one Korban. The wheat is later. The barley is what's used for the Omer. Now, barley is used for only one Korban. Anybody know which Korban that is? Right. The Korban Sota is the only one which uses barley. The Gemara has some unkind things to say about the Sota, about the woman who is accused of infidelity, and says, why is barley used? So if you look at source 16 in the last line, here you have Rabbi Gamliel speaking, if that's what you wanted today. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Kishem Shema'aseh, Ma'aseh Behema, Kach Korbana, Machal Behema. Because this woman acted not as a human being who uses thought and uses the Eitz Tov and so on, but rather acted instinctually, which, by the way, is also connected to immediate gratification, because she acted instinctually like an animal, therefore the korban that she would bring would be a korban of barley. Now, that to me is very interesting, because why should the Omer specifically be connected to the barley? So let me point out one more element which will connect this. When the Jews were guilty of the golden calf, what does Moshe do right afterwards? He takes the golden calf, he takes it, he makes them drink it. He grinds it down and makes them drink it. Does that remind you of anything? Of course, that's a law that we later find associated to the Sotah, which means that the process of the Sotah is found, the element, or one of the elements, is found right over here in terms of after the Chet Ha'Egel, which therefore leads me to the following thought. What was supposed to happen next? And I'm sorry for asking such questions because I know it bothers people. What was supposed to happen next? They were supposed to leave Egypt, go via Sinai, and go to Eretz Israel. The whole process should not have taken that much time. What should have happened when they get to Israel? And I think that's the big question. Which means when they get to Israel, are they supposed to enter into an agricultural society where they're the ones who will be working and with the sweat of the brow and so on? Let's remember something. Bread coming from the sweat of your brow is a punishment. That's a punishment. When they leave Egypt, what do they now find? They find themselves in an Eden-like experience where Lechem comes min HaShemayim. What would have happened had Moshe led them into Israel? Would they now have gone back to a sweat of the brow post-Eden experience? Or would they have retained this man and then perhaps some higher levels as they enter Israel and create the, again, which means, here's the question. Was Israel supposed to be the promised land, or was Israel supposed to be paradise? I mean, it was definitely the promised land, but paradise was lost. And my point is that when we read the verses over here about the Omer, and it says, start counting the Omer as you go from the time between Pesach to Shavuot. Again, when does it say to do this? When you get to the land of Israel. Which means when you get to the land of Israel, now what are they told? You're going to start working again. You're going to have to start working the land. You're going to bring bread and so on from the sweat of your brow. And you're going to count the times to Shavuot. Now, why are you going to count? Why are they going to count? Because they didn't have patience. They need to learn how to count. Where do you see that they didn't have patience? That's the problem all the way through. From the Chet Ha'Egel as well. They didn't know how to count. I'm saying quite the opposite is true. They knew exactly 50. They did not know how to count afterwards. So what happens now? So the counting becomes also part of the tikkun in order to eventually go into the land of Israel, but they need to work on themselves. It can't be immediate gratification. It can't be grabbing things that God did not say to take. What you eat, what he says to eat, you eat. What he says that you can't eat, you can't eat. But that was the sin in Gan Eden. So I think that once we realize this, then there is definitely going to be this whole bittersweet aspect to bringing the Korban Omer when you realize that in terms of the barley, it's connected to the Sotah. There's going to be something negative in terms of the counting as well. Because counting generally, again, there's different kinds of counting in the Torah. Most counting in the Torah is going from Tumah to Tahara. That's most of the counting. And just in case you tell me, yes, of course, in Egypt, they went to the 49th level of Tumah, and that's why they're counting 49 days. All of that is wonderful. I agree with you. And no one ever said it before the 16th century. about the 49 days, about the 49th level of Tuma. The Zohar does say, the Zohar does understand the counting over here also is going from Tuma Vitara. The Zohar definitely makes that reference, he understands it that way, and sees the 7 weeks as 7 days, and counting Shivan Nikiyim, and understands that's what the 7 weeks are of the Omer. But 13th century, they would say, but still, when we think about Omer, again, the first thing you would ask somebody what the Omer is, the Omer is the time between Pesach and Shavuot, between the time when we left Egypt till we got to Har Sinai. As I said, that's wonderful, it just doesn't happen to reflect itself within the verses themselves. Even if you're going to tell me, well, that's the Torah Shebaal Peh, well, the Torah Shebaal Peh is not as strong as you may think it is, that the primary use of the Omer is an agricultural law, but what ends up happening because of the Omer, again, this there's no question about, because of the Omer, Pesach does end up getting linked together with Shavuot. Again, that you can't avoid either. Which means otherwise, Pesach, I'm going back to what I said in the beginning, otherwise Pesach would have been only a law having to do with history and theology, but not having to do with agriculture, while the other ones had to do with agriculture. Placing the Omer over here now links Pesach together with Shavuot. Now, once Pesach is linked together, so we say, okay, it's linked together in terms of agriculture. But what then happens, once it's linked in terms of agriculture, how else does it need to be linked? It also needs to be linked in terms of history, which means when I realize that Pesach has just become multifaceted, having historical and an agricultural side to it, so now Shavuot, which only had an agricultural side to it, suddenly achieves also a historical side to it. And what's that? So now you have to fill in the blank. What's that? It's Matan Torah. Which means at the end of the day, I'm going to come back to the same conclusion that all of you knew before I started. I told you, you knew everything already. But the question is how you end up getting there. Getting there is not as simple as you would have thought or just the way that all of us are taught. Yeah, that's the time in between. Marion? So again, if you therefore keep your eye on the bread becomes the significant thing here. It's and again, in my mind, there's no question. The bread, poor man's bread, or what do you want to call it, the matzah, without the Yetzer Hara, going through animal type of food, again, that's the way it's now. But that animal type of food was not there within the historical part. What was there in the historical part, something very different from the animal food, what was it? It was Lechem min Hashamayim. You know, you think about that difference, that contrast between the two Omers, the Omer which is Lechem min Hashamayim and the Omer which is animal food, that's the starkest difference. That really could have or perhaps should have been the starting point. But if I use it as a starting point, I'm definitely going to use it as the conclusion that the Omer which we have over here seems, in my mind, to take the place of the Omer which was there, which then leaves us with this tantalizing question, so what would have been had we not sinned with the Chet Egel, and we'd not cheated on God, and we'd not have been treated like a Sota, and we'd not, and again, you fill in all the details now, maybe we would have retained the other kind of Omer, which was Lechem in Hashemayim. Okay.